The following program is an abridged audio version of the streaming video talk show, A Wonderful Chaos. The hosts are Andy Chaliff and Bambos Dimitriou. The format is entirely casual, unscripted conversation. If you'd like to watch a live taping or participate with your comments in real time, subscribe to A Wonderful Chaos on YouTube, Facebook, Periscope, or Twitch.
The masculine represents more presence, clarity, focus, direction, and all that is love. Love with a capital L, that this is a soul transmission of life itself. That's what the masculine represents, and it doesn't matter what genitals you have, what body you're in, everybody has those qualities. What I explained in the dance of the sexuality, you can live that in every aspect of your life. And that's what this map is about. That's why it doesn't matter what body you're in. It's for humans. And it's for the planet.
It's a wonderful chaos. Beautifully random. Messy and glorious.
Solo or tandem.
We work to find rest. We fight to find peace. Both head and the heart.
Like a nephew and niece.
What are we doing here?
You mean listening to this show?
Where the more that you learn. The less that you know. Where the wounded are healers
and the atheists pray.
It's a wonderful chaos, and we like it that way. It's a wonderful chaos, and we like it that way. It's a wonderful chaos, and we like it that way.
Welcome to another day, Bambos Charles Dimitriou.
Yamas.
Cheers.
So
today we're on Wataki, and I'm really excited about this show for a lot of reasons. One was, this is a show that you brought in.
And it was very random. I do not know her. I just stumbled upon it on a YouTube video where I heard her being talking about this subject. Mm. And I thought it was interesting to bring her on.
And what we're going to discuss with Taki is dealing with her dark masculine and how she utilized that. And we're going to call it, and I'm going to specify because we got on before the show, the negative dark masculine, as she'll correct me when we begin. And we're going to discuss that and how she learned to make peace with that in herself and how she utilizes that to support others that are challenged by the same thing.
Yeah.
You said you saw her video. What was it about her video that got you excited and you thought, okay, that's some the show?
It actually wasn't about the content. It was about her as a person.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like I really don't remember what she said.
Yeah.
But it was just her energy and the way she was speaking and the energy which was holding her words. Mm. It felt really grounded. And I was like, okay, that's the kind of person I want to interact with.
Nice.
So here we are. And she's half Greek.
Yeah. So she knows how to deal with the dark masculine, because God knows you've got a lot of that going on in you.
Did you just throw that at me?
Is it true?
I love it.
the thing that I think I've always appreciated, and I think, you know, the whole masculine and feminine and then the dark masculine, dark feminine, all these terminologies and words. I think when we have shows, I always talk about labeling and how in labeling we become blind because we don't see nuance anymore. We project, we have a value statement, we put a value on it that's implicit, and then we don't see things anymore. We don't understand what they really mean.
Yeah.
And I think what Taki said immediately on the show when I was just rambling through and say, give me a few things to say about you. She's like, Andy, you know, they're not negative nor positive. They just are, and yet they can have negative or positive consequences, of course, which is just how life is. But what I thought was really sweet was that at first when she sees us rambling through stuff, she must, of course, think these guys are just absurd in one level. But then I hope that in the meantime, she'll get to see that we try to hold space lightly. Yeah. So we're
not
as if we don't also see what value she brings, of course, right?
Yeah.
And I know that some of the work we've done, and you've gone into men's groups as well, and I think that would be great to also to discuss with her your experiences there, because I also have my own ideas around some of these things.
Yeah, I would say the most profound work that I've done was Core Energetics with Joan Levazio, and the 15 month course I did with you.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that really made me at peace with all parts of myself. Like, there's no problem. with anything. There's a full embrace. Yeah.
And if you think about the group that we did for the 15 months, it was actually what one would normally, I believe, see in a men's or a woman's group. But we learned how to hold space regardless of gender in that group, as far as I was concerned.
Yeah.
But we'll talk with Taki about what the differences might be.
And so much more.
To stop that, let's welcome Taki on. Hi, Taki.
Hi.
Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Anything in the intro that you'd like to correct?
No.
Nice. No. You know, what I thought was really sweet when Bambos asked you to join was that your competency is leading this men's and women's groups and doing individual work. And you, on this show, we often don't like to bring competencies on. We like to discuss with people. So when you said, hey, I'm really open to discussing my dark masculine, the one that was the negative and the one that's not to be judged, then I was really grateful, because what that shows in me is a deep sense of being okay with everything as it is, that you don't need to present yourself in any light in order to feel like it's okay for the people, the clients or people who might see this. So I just wanted to thank you for that.
You're welcome. And actually, you're pointing at one of the big pitfalls of the past two millennia, which is light, 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 perfection, clean, like so sparkling, you know, you can lick off of it, and shunning the dark, shunning the more earthly realms and our humanity. And that everyone falls from that pedestal. Everyone.
Mm. Yes. You know, in 2 weeks, we have a show coming up where I'm going to play a guru.
Okay.
And it's the show half excites me and half scares the shit out of me, because I have to put on all of the tricks and the tools and the ways that people undermine other people's agency so that they can take over, that you need me to get somewhere. So that's I'm going to role play how it looks. And Bambos is going to be the
interviewer,
or the follower.
Right. The disciple.
The disciple. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. I didn't know I had that role.
That's the role.
Okay.
I know. So for the past two millennia, that's also been the type of era we've lived in, has been very sun in the middle, like the sun that shines, sun in the middle and sunflowers all around. And that's the guru version. And what we have seen over the past decade, at least, if not more, is the fall of that. It's a transition to a different era where the emptiness is in the middle. And it's, cosmically speaking, it's the galactic center, and before it was the sun, and now there's a black hole in the middle, and everybody is a sun or a planet or a star or whatever you want to be. So the fall of the gurus is actually a fascinating thing to observe as a collective initiation.
Yeah,
and to refer to the inner master. So have fun, disciple.
Yeah. Exactly. You better play the role well. Exactly.
Bring him down. Can
you talk a little bit about that point in your life where you discovered that there was how shall we address this so that we address it? Imbalance?
Well, can I ask a question on that road?
Yeah.
Like, let's go to your life, if you can take a step back and start with the who you were and what you had to go through and like where you noticed the messy part in your life and how you addressed it.
Oh, there's been different layers of messiness, so I don't think I'm going to try to use all of it.
So you were born at 1 year old. What was the thing that happened that traumatized you?
It was in the womb. It already started in the womb. But okay. Basically, you know, there's the whole mommy daddy thing, and one daddy leaves, and you know, dad crushes the little girl, the baby girl, who will then seek out father in everyone, and only to destroy him and push him away, because then otherwise she can't keep playing that game. And so men can't be trusted, men are not dependable, men will not be there, and you can do with them whatever they're weak. So that's the mommy daddy version.
But by the way, I just like to just soak that in a moment, because like I can feel that in my system, and clearly that narrative is so widespread.
Also in our lives.
Yeah, in our lives as well. Past, so yeah. I can fully say, you know, we say it so casually, but of course hearing it from you so casually back to us is also like, there's like a, wow, yeah, that it's so there. It's so clear. Yeah.
And that marks generations and generations, mm-hmm. hundreds, centuries, hundreds of years of men leaving for whatever reason, for work, for war, pilgrimages, and the absence of father, and then father sky, guru, master, teacher, substituting, and a disconnection with father in ourselves, in all of us. It's the hardest archetype for those in women's bodies to connect to, because there's a physical representation of it. To fathering yourself, to having the father qualities you've always wanted. And I know that wound exists in men and women, because fathers aren't leaving their daughters, they're leaving homes. Or they don't know how to connect to their children because they didn't have a role model, It's the story of, you know, generations and generations. And this generation is finally saying, maybe the buck stops here. Maybe I'm not going to pass that on. Whether I choose to be a biological father or mother or not, that maybe that disconnection, that needing to leave, and that again is part of the unhealthy light masculine of, I'm going to go search for purpose. I'm on purpose. I'm going out there, and I'm going to have to leave the worldly world behind. That includes my children. And that includes my family. Buddha.
Yeah.
Siddhartha, 2,000 and a half years ago. You know, we look at him and say, yeah, oh, wow, you know, what he did for humanity. And yeah, he left his young child and wife to do it.
Yeah, isn't it funny how that part of the story is sort of also not considered like the drama that it brought to that family?
Yeah, and he came back, but not to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so now we're entering an era where, yes, you can live on purpose. Yes, you can totally, you know, be what you came here to be as a soul, whatever body you're in. Mm. And you don't have to leave the worldly world behind to do it. You don't have to go into a cave. You don't have the fathers no longer need to leave. And fathers by fathers, let's say, you know, the masculine no longer has to leave. I can be here in matter. Yeah. So it's a beautiful part of the transition we're in as a humanity. And I'm surrounded by beautiful examples, including my own husband, of fathers who have chosen otherwise and are doing their best. And not to say that our fathers didn't do their best. That was their best.
Yeah. My father was an asshole. Taki, I'm just.
I wasn't raised by mine.
Taki, please. I love my dad, and I actually love him more for how he treated me, because I realized much later in life that there was so much love in his incapacity that I didn't even have to forgive him in that sense. It was just like, wow, this guy was so full of love that I could never see.
I'm grateful I wasn't raised by mine.
Yeah. Wow.
I'm grateful that, like, yeah, thank you for bringing me to this world. And thank you for the ways you did show up, which did help. And thank you that I didn't have to do that 24/7.
Yeah.
Because I would have had a lot more to work through than I already did. And of course, who knows? But that's how it worked out. So to go back to your question, so there was the daddy bit. So I have all the classic bits. I had the sexual abuse as a child by a father figure. And that totally, you know, again, men cannot be trusted. I mean, like, you're an adult and you can't keep your dick in your pants like that. There's, you know, with a child. And so it just kept reconfirming my, men are
monsters.
Yeah.
It was more like weak. The weakness. And that was something my masculine couldn't respect. I didn't know that then. I couldn't put that into words then, but it was like,
can you explain that to me? Cause that sounds like a really beautiful thing I don't quite get. Your masculine, which as it called it manifest, was judging men as weak.
Yeah, I mean, there was also the feminine parts in me that were judging men as weak, but also as brother to brother, like I have a very strong masculine and a healthy one.
Can you tell me what that means to you so I can understand that in more terms?
And look, you know, like you said about labels and things, I totally agree. If we were able to connect to ourselves as the souls that we are and not forget it, we don't need any of these labels.
Clearly.
We don't need any of this map. None of it. We're whole as it is.
Yeah.
But since we forget, it's like, okay, let's put this in this corner. Let's put this in this corner. The real question is, do you have these energies integrated in you or not? Call it purple, call it masculine, call it duck, elephant. It doesn't really matter what you call it. Do you have it integrated in your being? Are you whole? No? Okay, work on it. Call it what you want. So in the map that I work with, the cross, which was passed on to me by Bruce Lyon, the masculine represents more presence, clarity, focus, direction. Yeah, it's that arrow.
Mm-hmm.
And presence. And all that is love. It's not that then the feminine is love and that's not love. That is love. That is love with a capital L, not personality, sweet, romantic. Oh, I like you now. I don't like you because you did something I don't like. Not that kind of love, but love with a capital L, that this is a soul transmission of life itself. That's what the masculine represents. And it doesn't matter what genitals you have, what body you're in, everybody has those qualities. And those are labeled as more masculine qualities, we can say. And the more feminine would be more the interconnectedness. So the masculine stands alone, the feminine connects, knows that she, it, whatever, elephant, has never been alone, would never be alone. There is no separation. Everything is part of the same ecosystem and feels deeply, 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 deeply. And so together, and that is love. That is love. And then together, they complement each other. And then you have the light and the dark, the light being the more etheric soul realms and the dark being the more earthly realms and of matter, more density. So the dark masculine is a combination of the presence and the earthly. So he's the one who gets shit done. He's manifesting. He's cutting through bullshit. He's that dude. He knows what he wants. This is me. This is what I want. Hi. Nice to meet you. And the dark brother is more about purpose, being connected to soul purpose. I know who I am and I know why I'm here. Not who you think I am, not who you want me to be, but who I really am and why I'm really here and why I chose to incarnate. And that can't be touched by whatever storms happen out there. That is the light brother. Together, they make an incredible team, and there's an incredible sisterhood as well, but we're focused on the masculine. So that's what it means for me. I'm connected to my masculine. And when I see a brother out there, whether it's my father, my biological brother, my husband, a friend, participant, whoever, and there isn't that level of integrity, that level of standing for who you are, for what you want, that cleanness, then yeah, as a teenager, I didn't know that's what was happening, but there was certainly judgment there on the masculine that no, I don't respect you.
Yeah.
And of course, when there's no respect, especially if it's in a relationship, you take over. Your masculine takes over.
Well, yeah. So I have an ex-husband.
I was going to say, we can give you a prime example of this, Bambos.
I have a current husband and I have an ex-husband. So one of the things that I found out the hard way, it was that because my masculine was very strong, but also overdeveloped, like over-dominating, not in balance, not healthy in that sense, in balance. Some men would find that intimidating, would find that challenging. And I didn't know better at the time to be able to have a brotherhood with those men. And they didn't know better to have a brotherhood with me. And because I'm in a very small woman's body, the brother in me gets overlooked very easily. And so then I get judged as, okay, you're just a really masculine woman or a really strong, you know, bitchy, bossy, pushy, whatever woman. And I was like, no, I know what I want. I have clarity. I have integrity. I go for what I want. I focus. Do you?
Yeah. When you discuss and I'll work a lot with females in leadership roles. And the one thing that frustrates the hell out of me is when they embody the qualities you just said, the word bitchy comes into and not strong, not focused, not like all the things that if it was a male and a male persona, a whole different labels will be projected onto it. So it's a,
exactly.
And even the size, you know, even the small stature would immediately, the strong masculine energy, whatever, however we label it, but that coming from a smaller statured person immediately is harder for the world to absorb and take seriously because it's not the representation of it in their brains.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's the healthy masculine is so needed in the world. And it's like, wherever you can get it, please water it. Mm. Please relish it. Please recognize it. Because whether it's in men's bodies or women's bodies, the masculine has been so distorted. The feminine too. But let's stick to the masculine. And so many times, and I have to say also, there's a flip side to that coin. The flip side is that if you were wanting to hide, if you were God, a guru, let's do a guru practice for you for the 2 weeks to come. You wanted to hide the qualities of a strong, dark, healthy masculine. Where would be the best place to hide it that nobody would realize?
I would assume it just right out in the open so that everyone could see it.
Well, that sometimes turns out to be like a mafia boss.
Yeah, okay.
Because they don't make it. The healthy part doesn't.
Okay, got it. So no, I don't know. The answer is I don't know.
You've got the big body. You've got the testosterone running. I know. Yeah. I've said this 1,000 times. If I had been born in a man's body and I had the testosterone running through me, I would have definitely been a mafia boss. Yeah. Like I would have been like, no offense to mafia bosses.
Yeah.
But I would have gone a very different way. But one of the best places to hide it, or the best place to hide it, is where people are going to dismiss it or not see it. Even it's standing right in front of you, not going to see it because you look at form.
You have to say that again now because I don't understand it, and it sounds like it's a beautiful point.
It sounds like it's important. Yeah. So you hide a big dark masculine in a little woman's body.
How does that show up? Because I can't, I mean, it almost feels like you're saying something that I can kind of half realize, but I need more examples to fully grasp what it is.
I'm going to give it to you the other way.
Okay.
Maybe it'll be easier for you because you're in a man's body. So where to hide the purity and innocence of the maiden in a man's body so that she doesn't have to face the groping, the abuse, the... you have to play by the man's rules or whatever. She can thrive.
I would say, this is not an officer. I would see it as emotionally shut down and angry. Like that's how I would it doesn't feel hidden, but that's how I would experience a reaction.
Okay, so maybe it's just a different word than hiding, but it's more like, where can you preserve it? Let's try that one. Where can you preserve it so that it doesn't become as distorted? It doesn't have to go through the testings of coming in that form. So I didn't have to go through certain testings because I'm not in a big man's body.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't develop any reactions to that I need to act this way or that way because there isn't any conditioning that comes with this body around the masculine. Zero.
Oh, fascinating.
So these qualities can be preserved for when they're ready to be shown. And that came in my 30s. That came later. But yeah, it's more like a preservation, let's say, instead of a hiding.
I'm sorry. I think I didn't get your point because we've been discussing abstractly. But what I'm now hearing, and I'd like to rephrase it, and not that I completely understand it yet, but I do. But you're saying something that's really fascinating to me, which is that your physical stature and gender, obviously, are going to create a response from the environment you're in. And that will teach you lessons, and some lessons you'll never actually learn because you're never going to be confronted with them because of how your gender and your size?
My gender and my size will allow me to maintain the qualities of a healthy masculine more than if I was in a man's body, a big man's body that had to go through whatever it has to go through.
Ah,
nice.
That's not all. That's not 100%. Of course, there are plenty of examples of healthy men, healthy masculine in men. Huge, like tons.
I've never heard it being articulated in that way.
Me neither.
So it needs to land, but it resonates.
It resonates with me as well in that sense. Yeah.
And I met the flip side, the one I described about the innocence and so forth, in my husband, and I was shocked. And my current husband.
Does he have a name? So at least we...
No, we don't want to... We're going to keep the innocent.
His name is Timo. He's fabulous.
Timo, nice.
Okay, we're going to have him next.
We're going to have him on next.
Sure, yeah.
The show is going to be called Uncovering the Dark Feminine.
So yeah, it's a beautiful play, Lila, the play of God. It's a beautiful play to play with form and to play with the energies in form and to preserve in different ways.
Yeah,
something is coming up for me. You spoke earlier about sometimes women being accused of being too masculine, and that's something that I've experienced in myself when meeting women who had a trauma and they don't trust men, and they had to cultivate their masculine in a way that they, and I also saw, I'm not attracted. I find it difficult to be with a woman like that, but it's not because I'm scared. But what comes up for me in the past when I would, the lovemaking, was hell.
Okay. Let me go there. Yeah.
And I saw, I'm very comfortable surrendering and being in my feminine, but I do identify more in my masculine. So if there will be a dance where we would interplay, I saw that was lacking and it wasn't fulfilling me. And I'm wondering in what I'm saying here, actually, I'm just looking for you to be a mirror here a little bit.
Yeah, sure. So it doesn't mean that, yeah. So many women who have had woundings and challenges, right now I'm in a group, I'm leading a group of 36 women through the masculine for 3 months. And the first thing we do is we spend a month on wounding.
Only a month?
Yeah, well, I've got 3 months, so I dedicate one third of it. Wounding.
Yeah. Can you share a little bit about what wounding looks like?
Yeah. So in my experience, the wounding in me, the way it came out, is I needed to prove I was stronger, smarter, better, more reliable, more anything, basically. Right. I was better at being a man than you. Let's put it down, you know, very easily summarize it. And I don't think I'm a minority. And that's why we spend a month on wounding. The flip side of that same coin, wounding coin, is I'm less than a man. A man is better. Daddy needs to tell me, or daddy needs to take care of me. I'll be always a princess. I can't work it out for myself. Some kind of victim, less than, you know, so either you put yourself above or you put yourself below, yeah. But you're not equals.
Yeah.
That's what the wounding can look like physically, not physically, in everyday life. Yeah. So either you're put up on a pedestal and save me, or you're try to be pushed down, or
normally it would go first were put on a pedestal until they see all the things they projected into us falsely to begin with, and then we're knocked down to become villains. Yeah.
Yes, that's an interesting game. So that's what wounding looks like. And then, yeah, of course, if you're on the receiving end, either you don't like it and you're like, get away, or you have a corresponding wound and you play into it, and there goes the games of much of relating. That's how we spend most of our time, actually, in matching wounds. So that is not the healthy masculine in a woman. Let there be no misunderstanding that that is not a healthy masculine. Masculine challenges its brother to rise by standing, not by dominating or ridiculing.
Beautiful.
So that's what brotherhood is. I will not shrink to make you feel better or more comfortable, but I'm not going to put you down, and I will continue to stand so that you can rise.
I love that.
That's the healthy masculine, whether it's in a woman's body or man's body. So if it's anything not that, it's not that.
Yeah, understood, for sure.
Yeah. So in relationship, so it doesn't matter if it's same sex, opposite sex, relating, what can often happen is we are attracted to something that we haven't fully developed inside of us. That's at one level of relating. At another level of relating, let's say more whole, not wound. So in the wounding relating, you will complete me by being XYZ. And yeah, I will complete you by being ABC, because you haven't developed ABC and I haven't developed XYZ. And so, okay, together we can make two halves. I'm half Greek, but I'm also half Bolivian. So two half oranges is how it said. Two media naranjas, you put them together and you have one orange.
I always call that, I call that codependency.
Yes. That's yes. So doesn't really lead to growth. It may be comfortable and it might be exciting. It thrives on polarity.
Yeah.
But you can work with polarity in a healthy way. So this is what happened with Timo and I, which was that we were attracted to each other for many reasons, but one of them, we don't have matching wounds. So that's already like, oh, okay, we don't have to play that. And he recognized a dark brother in me that was not as developed in him. And he was like, I see you. I want to drink from that fountain. And I recognized a innocent light feminine in him that had not developed as fully in me. And I was like, how is that possible? Like, really? I want to drink from that. We didn't necessarily say hello and say those words afterwards, but that's what that dynamic that was going on. And so then we consciously positive projected, meaning, okay, that's, you hold that, I hold this, but you're going to hold it as a modeling, and I'm going to keep drinking from this until I grow. Not I copy, not monkey see, monkey do, but I grow, I develop these qualities, and they will shine through me in the unique way they shine through me. And same in reverse for me with this innocent feminine, light feminine that he has. And I can honestly say that we have reached that stage where his dark masculine, and I'm like, and my light feminine also in those areas where they were not developed are in sisterhood and brotherhood and equal equality. Now about the sex. And about the attraction. Generally, it's funny because I have this running joke where it's like, you know, he doesn't have to worry, he doesn't have to be jealous because, you know, all the men I'm interacting with are my brothers.
Yeah.
Like I'm in brotherhood. So where's the attraction? So if you're working only on polarity, I hold this polarity, or primarily I hold this polarity, only under feeling so safe or so expanded or so, you know, exceptional circumstances, I can switch, because we all can. And then you hold this polarity, then somebody out of that polarity isn't going to be attractive to you. Regardless of the physical or whatever, there isn't going to be that chemistry because the chemistry is working on the polarity. But if you can both dance, on both sides. And so what I found with Timo in our lovemaking, because he was the first man to engage with me sexually, romantically, and fully accept my dark masculine, and not, you know, basically what I say is like, you can't have two hard cocks in the room. Like,
yeah,
that's a turnoff for the one that has a physical cock. Unless you are very fine with your feminine and you can dance. And it doesn't mean I'm holding the masculine point and he's holding the feminine point. It just means that there isn't that, like, I'm holding this and, but you're also here. So wait, one of the cocks needs to leave the room, kind of thing. Or we just go limp, both of us, and we don't have a sexual thing going on. So most of the, basically there's two types of men that are attracted to me. One is one that has a strong feminine integrated in him and a strong masculine. Otherwise it feels a bit like, you know, it's not very attractive to me, I can say. We go back to that, like, not so respecting. So it's not my equal. Or somebody who's into power. A man who's into power.
Because he wants to dominate.
No, not power. And again, kind of like the dark masculine, the word power is often has a negative connotation. And in this case, power neutral. Power, the power that comes from the earth, the power to manifest, the power to stand in your purpose, power. And power can be felt. Power can be sniffed. Power is like you can feel it in your body. When power walks in the room, it doesn't matter what body comes in. It's like there's an attention. There's like, there's a response to power. And most of the time it's from people who want power. And it's like, oh, power just walked in. Hello. You know, let me go introduce myself.
Yeah.
So usually it's somebody who's attracted to power because I definitely emanate power. And for those who feel threatened by that, obviously there's going to be no attraction.
Yeah.
But if you're secure in your own, then there isn't any, you know, I mean, I can be attractive or not to you. And in the sexuality there, I mean, it's so beautiful. We never like went into it like, okay, now you be in the masculine or I'll be in the masculine or you be in the, you know, like it's not a conversation. It's just, you know, we start and there's been beautiful, beautiful moments of like just switching and switching. And then like, we're both in the feminine, we're both in both at the same time. And it's just a incredible world that opens up that I am whole and you are whole and we are dancing as two whole beings.
Stop. This is too delicious.
I want you to know that it does not have to be horrible or whatever your experiences have been.
But you're dealing with a sexually tender Bambos right now. So the description is going to send him on a whirlwind tour in his head. Bambos, how do you feel when you hear Taki speak?
Delicious, I said.
Yeah. I was thinking maybe you're like, damn it, when am I going to find that woman? You know?
I'm working on 36 of them right now.
Yeah, Bambos. They're in line for you. They're 1 month of dealing with all of their emotional baggage, you know?
So you heal them.
And then you send them over.
I, you know, for sure, I'm not a healer. Everybody heals themselves.
I know.
And, you know, this is where I'm going to start the men's equivalent of this on the 17th. So in like 10 days, whatever, 12 days. Mm-hmm. And we also will spend a month on the wounding.
Beautiful.
There's no getting around the masculine wounding.
No.
Doesn't matter what body you're in. And that's why I work with them separately, because the masculine wounding that is in the man's body and the masculine wounding that's from in a woman's body are quite different. They're experienced very differently. Yeah, there are overlaps for sure. But that safety of like, okay, I'm with my brothers in men's bodies or I'm with my sisters in women's bodies and I can explore this and I can cry about this. I can bitch about this. I can, you know, whatever, beat pillows about this. I can whatever. That's needed.
Yeah, because you'll be triggering other wounds in people if you're dealing, if you're crossing genders in a session, of course. Yeah.
Exactly. So if I'm there talking about the child molestation or the rape and somebody next to me has actually, you know, crossed a sexual boundary or whatever, it's just going to like Yeah, you and yeah, no. But yeah. So it, I have found that it goes deepest if it's done separately.
Yeah, yeah. Clearly. We have a comment early on from Bolalang.
Before the show even started.
Was that even before the show started? Yeah. Oh, beautiful. No, I don't. Is that true?
Yeah, when you're doing the intro.
Oh, okay. Bolalang is in South Africa, and he says, as a dark masculine person, I want to be sure that language is not used to put us down unconsciously. Thanks, Andy, for mentioning that not just masculine, but negative, a negative one. What about darkness?
Interesting. Yeah, so I just want to make sure that the dark isn't about the skin color at all. Just like it's not about the, having balls and a cock.
I don't know. I didn't even think about that connection until you just made it. So, you, but what about darkness? Is he, you think that that is any reference to him, his own color, or is that just darkness in general?
I just want to clarify all the different ways dark is used, which is not this.
Oh, so okay.
Dark is used as color. Dark is used as unhealthy. Dark is used as evil. Dark is used as bad.
Unhealthy. Yeah, that's a big thing right now because the consciousness of using light or dark to reference good or bad is actually a real point at the moment. Yeah. And we know that Bolalang is not a good person in general. So we have to make no. He's our favorite, actually, our favorite person. He's actually emotionally on the sofa with us. And when he's not here, it feels hard to do the show. In fact, Bambos and
we've done 195 shows. He probably joined 160.
Yeah, at least. And so when he's not here, he's in South Africa.
All right.
And he's become a dear friend. He just became friends with us through watching the show. So now he's like a dear friend who, when he's not here, it's almost like, do we have to call him to make sure he's okay? Yeah.
Well, Bolalang, there is a woman in South Africa in the course right now. And so, I hope that she can stand in the healthy dark masculine along with you. And the dark here is specifically referring to earthly, dense, the darkness and richness of the earth itself.
Mm.
That's what the dark is referring to, not anything else.
Yeah. When I hear your lingo and I try to superimpose it up, because we already said labeling can be troublesome because in labeling, we don't see things as they are. We project and we make assumptions about those projections without knowing it. But as I'm listening to you and trying to feel into how I experience it when I do my own coaching practices, I often see a female, I'll just use a gender, who is not able to embody the confidence and strength to say, I'm in a role, I'm good in this role, I'm capable and competent, and if I don't know, I'll figure it out. Mm. So there'll be a tendency to say, I need to do another course, I need to do another this, I'm not complete yet, I'm anxious, there's people who do this better than me, and that whole narrative. And on the other side, I'll see the same a male in the same, call it, in the same cohort, same age, and same education and so on, saying, you know what, I'm confident in my capacity. I'll be able to do it really fine. And they don't have any skill or competency. So there's on one side, an individual who can't trust themselves. And on the other side, an individual that possibly trusts themselves more than they actually is good for their own good.
Yeah, that's the usual ego trappings of both sides.
Mm.
Where the female will error more often on the false humility because we are across cultures conditioned, be humble, you know, in other words, play it small. Don't rock the boat. Don't get yourself over your head, that kind of thing. In one way or another, directly or indirectly, there's much more conditioning on that side. Not everybody, of course. And they will err more on, I'm not good enough. I don't know, I'm not insecurity. Yeah.
No.
And the men will have the same insecurity, but will play it out as, I know I've got, of course I know, like I got this.
Yeah.
I got this. No, I don't. Yeah. It's the same insecurity, same coin. It doesn't matter above or below, same. Mm. It's just apparent differences. It's just in the form, but you can feel. I mean, you know, it's like, why don't you ask for help? Okay, you know, the classic, I'm lost. Okay, I'll give you a funny example, but it's a real example. And I was like, oh my God, Timo, he has, you know, he works with, he has a bookkeeper, right? An accountant. And the head of the bookkeeper, and they've been working with this business for the bookkeeping business for like hiring them to do their books for their business for, I don't know, 20 years, 25 years. Mm. So they know the guy, the head of the business well, it's a guy. And there was a guy assigned to, some person left, and then a guy was assigned, and he was getting things wrong, and he wasn't following up, and this and that. And Timo like went to the manager, the owner, and was like, look, you know, I can't work with this person. Give me someone else. And he's like, I'm never hiring any more men. They cannot ask for help. He's like, I'm only hiring women. I mean, okay, I'm sure that goes against all laws. Mm. But basically, that was a conversation that was had.
Yeah.
Because it was like, okay, you're bad for business because you won't ask for help. And who suffers? The customer suffers.
Yeah.
I'll give you another example from the groups that I lead. There's an exercise, a specific exercise. You need to ask for what you want. And that's all. That's all the instructions that are given. And in the women's version, they're like, so do I need to actually say it? So do like I speak that out? So I have to like I have to say it, right? Like five clarifications.
Yeah.
Saying almost the exact same words. And I'm like, yes, yes. Yes, you need to say it. No, nobody's a mind reader here. Yes, you got to spell it out. You got to actually ask it. You got to verbalize it. What if I want the person to know what I want? That's not the exercise now, is it? The exercise is I need to ask for what I want. Ask for what you want. If you don't want anything, you don't ask for anything. Same exercise, men. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Well, we already know what the men are going to ask for. I can't repeat it on air. So let's move on.
The conditioning runs so deep. And it's
of course it does. I was curious when I asked you the question, I made an assumption that I saw wasn't validated. I thought it was going to be connected to the masculine-feminine dichotomy. I just saw you addressed it in another way, which was just fine. But I just thought, how does this like layer over each other? But, you know, it was unimportant. But and yet interesting nonetheless, of course.
Well, it matters the body, the way you were conditioned. But the masculine is alive in all of us. But the unhealthy is the unhealthy. And it will either play out as over, giving an air of being overshored or under, depending on what body you're in. That part does make a difference.
Yeah.
Generally.
One thing I really loved how you talked about the dark masculine in terms of the energy. You gave like four statements where Bambos and I could identify with that personality type. And I laugh because that's how I at least experience myself. Like I always say, if I'm in an interaction with somebody, I don't care what they're doing. I want them to feel loved, supported, seen, and that if there's any way in which they could be nurtured to further the thing that they're doing already, then that's going to be where I see I can serve and add to their life. And wherever that isn't there, I don't need to meddle. That's not my place. I don't need to fix or solve or like, and I never had seen it in light of a dark masculine. I mean, I don't use this terminology usually, but I'd never seen it in light of that before, but it's like, yeah, that makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. And it also is going against the thing we discussed earlier, which was the guru model, which is why I'm so uninterested in anything that follows that modeling, because it isn't about giving agency to that person and supporting them and loving them and showing them I'm going to be an example of the thing that if there was more in the world, we'd all be a lot happier.
Exactly. So, you know, when people are like, I just say, you know, look around. This is what happens when you do not embrace the healthy dark masculine at the expense of the light brother or for whatever reasons. I mean, like a classic, a very good example of unhealthy domination, it completely like no dark masculine rules. You move from love, whatever you want to call it, freedom, truth, you know, it's still love. If you know it as love, it's love. Consent, always, not implied, explicit, consent, not interpreted consent. And that clarity, that integrity piece.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I need, when there isn't consent, and it is it love? Is there permission? And is it an integrity, like with me? So the former US president is a very good example of the unhealthy dark masculine. Who cares about consent? Who cares about integrity? You know, it's, and you look around and it's like, yeah, bring it on. Bring out the pus, squeeze it out. Bring up all the rotten parts of the unhealthy dark masculine so we can finally embrace and say, yeah, okay, maybe we need to embrace some of these qualities in a healthy way instead of keep pushing them down. Mm. And yeah, that I feel like that's for the whole planet. Like if you stood like for the environment or for whatever, you know, whatever you stand for, that's sacred. I want to clarify one thing though, because it's not just about personality. It does affect personality and everyday life 100%, your relationships, how, what you work in, how you work, how you deal with money, how you deal with power, how you deal with sex, everything in your daily life. Yes, absolutely. And it's a soul map. And it's an archetype, which means it's universal and archaic, which means it applies to any human being that's ever lived. And so these are energies that we all have access to when they're healthy. There is no exception. And it's not just about my dark masculine or your dark masculine. There is the dark masculine that we can all call on and let move through us. Like if somebody goes for prayer, I don't care who you pray to and what kind of house you pray, or in a foxhole, in the moment of death, is there something greater? Anything, anything beyond your little one experience in this body, anything, nature, Gaia, I don't care, anything. That level of let those energies come through this, because this isn't just about shitting, eating, you know, repeat. It's meant for so much more. And what I explained in the dance of the sexuality, you can live that in every aspect of your life. And that's what this map is about. And that's why it doesn't matter what body you're in. It's for humans. And it's for the planet. And yeah, if it can be used, however it can be used to support, even if it's just in your daily life and there isn't anything greater than that, and it's just about me and it's not in service to anybody, the soul is in service, by definition, is in service to something greater than the I, the little I. So, guys, tell me now.
I love you.
Yeah.
Proclamations.
What more is there to say?
Yeah. No, I want to ask you. Do I have time? Can I ask you?
We have all the time in the world.
Oh, love it. Okay, so what would you honestly say is, would you say, knowing not much about the theory, don't worry about getting things right or wrong or anything like that, but an unhealthy quality or that's overdeveloped, one that's overdeveloped and one that's underdeveloped, meaning it's stunted, it hasn't developed enough, it hasn't grown, it hasn't been cultivated, of the dark masculine, based on the just the things that I've shared here that you have inside of you that you can own. And a healthy, like, yeah, that's on point. So three.
Ask again. One unhealthy.
Overdeveloped, healthy, in balance, underdeveloped.
Nice.
What I can see, and you can tell me if this is in line. What I notice as a behavior in myself is that I'll have a polarity where I'll maybe focus and get really firm and directive and achievement oriented for a period. And then I'll just drop off and say, I just want to be just quiet and not have any interruption. So I don't know I don't judge that per se, but I am aware that there's a side that goes, oh, I'm feeling an impulse to act and to do. And then that kind of will carry me to the point when I'll sense I'm losing connection with just the pleasure of being. And then I'll kind of go further than I would want. But and then it'll become a little bit of an addictive state, because if I've gone this far, I've got to go the next step. And if I've gone that far, I got to go to the next step. And then I'll slowly find my way back to finding, making peace with not extending myself further than I am, than I'm feeling at peace with myself. So I don't know if I would, how far I'd call dark or not dark, but I would say the quality is almost letting the determination take over the allowance of just being at peace with just being.
Yeah. Yeah. So that would be an overdeveloped example of like, go, push, stop feeling, stop, you know, like realizing, did I eat, you know, did I sleep or whatever? Am I like maybe pushing people, like running over people or whatever? And that, yeah, can be an unhealthy or overdeveloped drive from the dark masculine who wants to get shit done and can get shit done.
And I would say if I looked at it as a scale, it would be like 20s and 30s, really strong, 30s and 40s less, 40s and 50s. It's like, there's a consciousness of the process going on, but it's still like, oh, I'm still going to do it because I decided to do it. So it's less of it, but it's still there. It's still a very, it's still a state. It's only maybe in the recent period where I wrote it. I told you I started writing the next book this morning. So I just started writing the book.
Did you talk to me today?
No, I didn't.
So you didn't tell me.
So I started writing the next book. There's been two books in the last 3 years. That gives you an indication of the amount of time and energy I put into things that don't do anything in the world outside of make me happy. Because books are generally.
You know, I was thinking about it today.
What's that?
And I really love the place you're in.
Yeah.
In your life. I would say that with being a mirror to him, the only place I'll see him losing agency over himself is when he starts to do a lot of traveling and working.
Mm.
That he's not nourishing himself and he's not living life from an inspiration. And as the words he would use, I feel compelled to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And he's there as a space holder, but kind of neglects this. And then he'll come back broken. And then maybe he'll be in bed for a few months, and then he starts to one day he's showering and all of a sudden he gets an impulse. And he'll follow the impulse, by the way.
Yeah, and so I just want to point what you guys just did, or what you're doing, Bombos. Where there's brotherhood, you can give that mirroring and you know there's implicit consent. But imagine those words coming from somebody who maybe you don't know or whatever. And we have so many woundings around the dark masculine because, yes, the dark masculine get cut through bullshit. Easy. Pull an arrow, hit bullseye. That's what it's really good at.
Uh-huh.
But that, if you're not ready to see that or admit that or hear it like echoed out in the world, people can feel violated.
Actually, people who watch our show sometimes feel violated by the way we interact between us.
Between us, yeah.
Actually, Andy has been my mentor. So sometimes he'll speak to me, and to the outside world, it does look like, wow, he's being a Gestapo, where I'm sitting here, and I'm like, wow, I'm receiving love here.
Yeah, I've gotten accused of such abuse from people that'll call me after the show and say, why are you being so difficult on him? And I'm thinking to myself, are they watching the same show? Like,
this is, again, the dark masculine, to put it in those words, is like, that is love. To tell you your shit stinks is love. Or to point out what could be, you know, cultivated or, you know, a direction you can look at or whatever, that is love. It's not cuddly. It's not fuzzy. It's not Disney movies, but it is love.
Yeah.
This used to be me, very boom. But I would actually say through working with Andy, I have found a place in myself which doesn't need to speak if I see there's no genuine question, because then I'm just imposing. And if I feel careful, the person, I can always ask.
Yeah.
if it's something that they'll be interested in. And if I don't feel the full yes, you know what? I love you for who you are and it's good. Without diminishing them, without anything. And in the past, I would tend to bum. And if you don't take it, fuck you. Like that was the kind of energy I used to live in.
But I would love to say, if I can go quickly, because your three points are exactly what mirrored what. So you said love, consent, and clarity or integrity. And that's exactly what I heard you say back just
nice.
Now.
Nice,
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I was about to point out, great, you just listed out your healthy dark masculine trait. Because one of the when there is a dark masculine alive, one of the ways it can go wrong is it starts policing. And again, that's the lack of consent. It's like, oh, I'm here to be the truth police, or I'm here to be the integrity police, or I'm here to be the bullshit meter for everybody. And it's like, did somebody ask you?
Yeah.
No. Okay. Yeah. And that's how I've lost friends and a marriage.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting because when you talked about your marriage, so my wife, Ronnie, is very much more of the masculine and I'm more the feminine in our dynamic. And it's funny because when you
were laughing, I'm just laughing and Bob was laughing.
I love them.
and the funny thing is that like when you said, and I really liked the way you phrased it because you went from what a codependent type of relationship would look like to where there's a complementary aspect to it. And then the way you said it is that you drink from the well of the things you appreciate and love in the other person. And and I really could see that in a way, you know, either Ronnie and I would both say that the differences that we see in one another, I've often said there's a respect for those things. There's not a judgment to it. And there's even an appreciation of what that brings to our lives and how I'd like to emulate it more in my life specifically. So there's a beauty in that I could recognize that. And I often say, you know, we'll often share our gratitude to one another like regularly, although it won't be done spiritually in a way that there's no spiritual practice. You know, Ronnie has never gone to a personal development course in her life. She hasn't read a book I've written. She's so disinterested in anything, but she'll say over and over again that everything she does is in imitating, and I use that word lightly, what she's learned from me in her work so that she'll acknowledge it. She appreciates it. So it's not that she's actively learning, but by being around me, she'll model the behavior and then see how it serves her.
Exactly. That exactly is the modeling. Yeah. And so we don't need more people, the guru thing, telling us what to do and how to do it and how to be. It's a modeling and I can drink, breathe that air. And then what is that version in me? So there's modeling and there's a transmission. If you hold a certain energy, you will transmit it. You don't need to teach it. You don't have to have practices, step this, step that. You transmit it. It's a vibration that comes out. And anyone who's around you will be influenced. They can receive it or not. That's up to them. Yeah. But it's still your transmission. So blessed are you and blessed is she.
Yeah, for sure. And I would say what you've just said is how when I go to a new coaching client, I say, we're going to do it for a duration because we need time. And what we do, it depends on every day because I'm not going to decide ahead of time because this is not. And what you'll get is you will get a vibration that you'll only start, you'll change and you'll have no idea why you've changed or why you do it differently, but it'll be something that you just, it makes sense over time as we work through challenge after challenge. So yeah, it's and I learned only afterwards, that's very much in a Buddhist practice where the teacher isn't teaching as much as modeling behavior. And then people learn from seeing people actually doing the thing that they are talking about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never really had a healthy model for a relationship until I met Andy and his wife. So often if people ask me like, what do I aspire for a relationship? I immediately get that image. And I remember Andy beautifully articulating, if I don't fully accept the person I'm with, it means I don't love them for who they are in the moment, but for an idea of who they can be. So don't even start the relationship if you just can't say a full yes to that person. And the other part he said was belief. If I have strong beliefs and I need the person to be something different, then again, that's a big no. And I carry these qualities with me when I'm also interacting with women and I'm just tuning into them. And it's really it actually narrows the selection pool, but it saved me a lot of headache.
That's not a but. That's a great thing.
And it's
weed that out before you need to go through the looping, the games, and the whatever. My God, thank him every time. Send him a bouquet. God, saved me from this one. Thank you.
You know what? You know what's funny? As he speaks, I'm almost like, are these really the things I'd want? You know, like I'm almost like, I mean, it's what he learned. It's what he took away, of course. And I'm like, wow. I don't know, because if I'm honest with Ronnie, you know, we were very different, and it did take us time to find each other. And possibly if it was the first 2 years, we wouldn't have been together if we didn't get through some shit. So in some ways, there is a grace period, I almost think of. And I also think, I mean, whoever we're together with today is going to be different than they are 2 years and 2 years after. So and the question is more, is a foundation there for us to build a relationship over time? Or is it, as you mentioned earlier, is it this codependency where if you change a little bit, you're not the person I need you to be, so I'm comfortable? That's the... Yeah,
exactly. And Timo and I developed a couple series called my own series, and I don't remember it. Hold on. Consort, because you're in service. Yeah. You're in service. And to that person being their best, even if that means without you.
Yeah.
Bingo. If you really love that person, that doesn't mean it's not going to hurt and you wish it to be otherwise. Sure. Yes. Mm. All of that. But,
and
so that means you are there for the change. Like if there's no change, like be worried. Nothing in nature doesn't change.
Yeah.
Be really suspicious of your own self. How is it that you didn't change? Really?
Yeah.
Or you're just holding yourself back so you can still fit into that box.
There's a show that, you know, we do once a week, Balmos and I do shows on our own. And one of the show names, we pick a name and then we just riff for an hour. And the show name that I had was No Match. And it was a way of living where you no longer say this is wrong or that's wrong or anything should or shouldn't be. But actually, there's just not a match anymore. And I see how hard it is because of what you've just enumerated, is that a lot of times there becomes an attachment to an outcome or what it should in their person's mind be, which means that we no longer allow ourselves to acknowledge that there's just something not working anymore.
Yeah, with my ex-husband, it took me 2 years of there was no match for me to admit there was no match. And never, not for one day have I ever stopped loving him.
Yeah.
Never. And it's been now 5 years. But I love that man so deeply. I still have dreams with him sometimes.
Yeah.
But that was no longer a match.
Yeah, exactly. There's a helplessness in it.
Loving thing to do is cut through the bullshit and point the arrow and pierce and say, this is over. Bring death to that which is a dead corpse, is rotten anyway, 2 years carrying it. And it's like, let it go. That's the most loving thing. And that is love. And that is dark masculine love, for example.
Yeah,
that
for
is
sure. Love. Yeah. There was another thing you said, which I thought was quite beautiful, was that you spoke earlier about like your dad not being there. And that was kind of the greatest gift, is that you also didn't have to manage his shit in your life. And it was interesting because in my dad and I, we would be separated for many years at a time because he would often go into a rage and disown me and you're dead and all that kind of thing. So there was like a long period of my life where I got to raise myself. I felt a deep sense of freedom in that. Meaning like the greatest gift he could give me was throwing me out and telling me I was dead to him. Because what it really meant is that I'm no longer codependent in a relationship where you're not giving me what I need and I'm not giving you what you need. Mm. And a year before he died, we got very close and we connected and there was no more judgment, no more looking back. And one of the moments when I remembered we were sitting at dinner and he was telling, you know, both my brothers, they became lawyers and he paid for their education. So he always felt, because he thought in terms of money, that actually he never gave me the things that he gave them. And I remember even now, it feels quite emotional to feel back into it. Was like, and it was like, I thanked him for doing the thing that he never would have thought was loving, which was kicking me out of the house and telling me I was dead. So at that moment, it was like a big confusion for him because it was exactly what I needed in order to have my own life back. And so it was a really weird moment to thank him for the thing that he regretted having done. And it was just a really beautiful, again, acknowledging the greatest gift we have sometimes is that those people aren't in our lives, because we can then become whoever we're meant to become without that, that, what do you call it, the weight on our ankle holding us back. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And this father piece, I know it's a very strong piece. Again, it's also mine and everybody I meet, basically. And so we work with it in the wounding. And one of the things I bring in is, you know, can you let go of being father's daughter or father's son?
Yeah.
Can you set yourself free and set him free, whether he's dead or alive?
Oh, yeah. He was set free a long time ago. And both dead and alive and before he died. So, yeah, it was, I think there's a transition moment when you no longer see them as a parent, but you see them as another person on the planet who just happened to be in a role that you didn't quite understand until you got older.
Just human.
Just a human. That's the role. And you're like, oh, wow. And now I had a story as a father and what that meant and what they're supposed to do. And now I can hold them accountable and blame them. So all of that dismissed before he left the planet. Thank God, you know.
Yeah, that's yeah. So great that you have that piece.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to have done enough of my own work that at the point I could be there for him where he was emotionally incapable. So we got past that. And also strangely, it changed because in a weird way, I could hold space for him in areas where no one else could because they couldn't see his pain.
So I'm a father. And I'm not allowed to see my daughter. And when people, like today, someone asked me, so why are you not seeing your daughter?
Mm.
And the answer that I normally share was, we got pregnant when we were 2 months together. I didn't have my shit together. I come from quite a violent background. So in a way, back then, violence wasn't an issue for me. It was a norm, shouting, being angry. It was like normal. And I went into a relationship trying to be a better version of my father, because at that point, I wasn't okay with my father. And after 4 years of being in that relationship and trying to love someone and be and not being able to live in that space and suppressing and exploding and just having this repeat play loop, I abandoned the relationship. Like, I left it. And there was no self-reflection back then or ability to put words to what I was experiencing. There was a lot of shame. And then the woman that I spoke to, yeah, but you're a completely different person. And I said, agreed. And I can't deny that there's consequences to a behavior that I held in the past. And of course, the price, there's a price that I have to also learn there. And of course, as I'm living my life, I'm leaving signs everywhere for my little one, whether it's in the podcast or my social media posts. Like, I never want her to feel that I don't love her. And I'll be whatever I need to be for her in order for her to grow. What I liked about how I was sharing, there was no blame for the mother. Like, I completely... I get it. And I just have to always trust that she makes decisions which are best for her and her family, which back then I was not able to be part of, apparently. And it hurts, and it's okay.
Is it okay if I share a story with you?
Sure.
It's not mine, it's Bruce's. He shared a similar story, not about the violence, but about not being allowed to visit his children after his first divorce. And he said, that's why he learned to astro travel. I'm not suggesting you learn to astro travel. So that he could travel to the bedside of his children at night and be with them. Because he knew physically he wasn't allowed. And he didn't know when he'd be allowed.
Mm.
But he wasn't willing to give up. Just like you, you're leaving these messages here and there. I would also invite you to know that your blood, your chromosomes run through her body. If there's something you want her to know, you just have to feel it and send it. I assure you without any doubt that a part of her will receive it. It may not be her neocortex. She may not be able to put it into words. And you may not even be able to override whatever other impressions she may be getting about you, not knowing you. But you certainly, certainly can connect that way. That bond can't be broken.
I would say I do that, but I'd never put words to it in the way that you expressed. So thank you.
Yeah, there's bonds that can't be broken, no matter how shitty or not shitty, but circumstantially challenging situations, maybe. Yeah.
It's funny, up until the point I met Andy, I felt ashamed for the father role I couldn't take on. And I always hid it. I would never be able to talk about it openly in case I'd be judged for not being there. And as I'm sitting here and just witnessing myself, I feel at peace. And everything else which that peaceful container contains, it has the whole realm, the whole spectrum in it.
Yeah. I remember with a partner, his ex-wife was not, she was playing games with the kids, the custody game. I remember being so outraged. And here was a man doing his best. He had not always been there, and they had issues between them. That's why they were divorced. But he was really doing his best, and he was a good man. Good man. Wanting to be a father. Wanting to be there for his kids. And I was so outraged at this woman, because I was like, there's enough men who are not even trying, not even willing to be there. Here's one who wants to be there. Give him a fucking chance. The father wound is a big one in our collective.
Mm-hmm. And with that, let's just take a deep breath in. I deeply feel grateful for the time that we shared together. Thank you.
Thank you both.
You did mention that you had some courses and things you were doing. Would you like to share that now so that people who are watching could reference that afterwards?
Yeah, thank you. The cross.one, thecross.one.
Bowl Along, just for Bowl Along, he associates the cross with religion. Bowl Along, this has nothing to do with religion, my friend. It's not the cross, just for reference. Sorry, I had to. I just love, we're so close to Bowl Along that it's almost like he's inside my head as you're talking. I'm sorry. This show is about having fun as well. My apologies.
No, I know. I wasn't sure if you guys were not having as much fun because I was taking it so deep or whatever. But
No.
This is Andy's quirky humor.
Terrible.
Okay. So the cross is the soul, the animal body, the masculine, the feminine. And there you have your cross. Nothing to do with Christianity. Christianity robbed it, trademarked it, but it's not original.
Yeah.
And I work with that map. That's the soul map. So again, the feminine, dark and light feminine for women and dark and light feminine for men. Mm-hmm. And another beautiful reason of doing it separate is that then the women are not referencing to the men for what is the masculine. I have to look inside. And then when we work on the feminine, the men are not referencing to the women. What does the woman, what does the feminine look like? What does she do? What, you know, let me start paying attention. Mm. I have to find it inside. So that's the beauty of working with them separately. So yeah, I would invite any man who's not, you know, it's not about who you should be, what you should be like a man. It's not men's work. It's with men. Yeah. But it's on the masculine. Mm. And if you're interested in doing deeper soul work that affects the everyday life, as I have given plenty of examples and so have you, you're invited.
Thank you very much for being with us. It was great spending the time with you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Send you a hug. And yeah, it was really fantastic kind of getting into your world. And we haven't done feminine masculine shows.
We're going to have to figure out another reason to bring you
on. Yeah, we'll figure out some other reason. Yeah.
I'll give you many. No problem.
I know. We'll figure that out. We'll do that offline.
I'm enjoying you guys tons.
Thank
Bye.
You. Bye. It's nice. I always enjoy when I'm listening and I have to feel my senses rather than go into my head to understand the person that we're with. Mm.
Similar.
Yeah.
When she was talking about the wounded feminine and what they were like, some of the wounds that they had, I just felt my whole stomach like turning like a tumble dryer.
Yeah.
So it almost feels when she's talking, she's touching different parts. But I guess we're both really sensitive in that way, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And we're also sensitive when people are teaching rather than embodying the thing, because then, you know, our questions are more about what is the person's experience rather than what did they learn. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so clearly Taki had a lot of experience. So it was, as she said, and I feel similarly, it's you kind of connect the vibration of the other person and say, where am I feeling it on a deeper level? Right. No, which is sweet. Yeah.
So thanks everyone for watching.
We will see you tomorrow for another episode of A Wonderful Chaos.
And so much more.
Thank you for being with us. Bye-bye. It's a wonderful chaos. We like it down.